the number one solution was actually the empowerment and of women and girls.
Louise Saunders.
Joining me this evening is Damon Gammo. Hi, Damon.
Hi, Louise.
Hi, thanks for joining me. 2040, why 2040, first of all? Why pick that year?
Well, I can tell you that originally it was 2080 and then it became 2060 and then we finally landed on 2040 because it felt like it was still relevant enough for people that might be parents now and that the world, you know, they'll be around at that time, but it was especially relevant for that younger generation that will sort of be in their mid-20s, 30s when that comes around. So it's just, it felt like the right number that was accessible and wasn't too far away and could still be relatable to most people.
It touches that nerve in us, doesn't it, that we want the best for our children if they're young or perhaps our grandchildren, that we'll be there to see their future and we hope that it's better for them, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the entire motivation for me making the film is that I have a four-year-old or five-year-old now. And, you know, as many parents are, I get very overwhelmed by, you know, what we're told about potentially what the future might hold for them. And so I guess it was a response to that of thinking, well, you know, this bombardment we get of that dystopian narrative about the future, there are things we can do. And I often use the analogy of going to a doctor. You like to get the diagnosis. That's really important. We've really done the diagnosis and now it's time to actually hear what we can do about it. And I think there are, what surprised me in the research and the filming over the last few years is just how many wonderful things there are out there and how many people are getting involved with them, but we just don't focus on those. We don't give them the spotlight. We're still so focused on the doom and gloom. And I think that takes a toll on us. We rely on hope and we want aspiration to move forward and take action. And if we keep hearing that negative, it can be quite paralysing and people switch off. And I was certainly in that position and this is what motivated me to make the film.
I guess it's an ultimate belief in faith, isn't it? If you believe that the ability for us to get there in a positive way already exists. Tell me about that as your starting point.
Well, I guess the, I remember reading the Viktor Frankl book, The Man's Search for Meaning, and that had quite a profound effect on me in terms of how much we rely on that sense of that something is going to happen, that we are going to reach a destination that's positive. And I think that's especially vital right now. And I spoke to an environmental psychologist actually very early on in the process. Her name was Renee Lertzman, and she said that when we get information that comes charged with fear or guilt or too much worry, that it activates this limbic system in our brain. And once that limbic system is activated, it shuts down our prefrontal cortex, which is where we do our problem solving and our creative thinking. And I just feel if you look at the media landscape at the moment, we are getting nothing but that negative imagery and those stories. And I, you know, I think we should be concerned about that with our children and what they're feeling. And I'm not sure if you saw the other day, but the young Greta Thunberg, who's the Swedish activist for climate, was addressing the EU and just broke down in tears talking about the deforestation and what's happening to our soils and oceans. And, you know, these kids are feeling this on a very deep level. So I think it's important that we bring into the narrative the solutions and the things we can do to give them a sense of inspiration, because that's really how a lot of us are motivated.
Do we need to take a good, long, hard look at ourselves as adults? Because it seems that every time young people speak up and become emotional about the issues that they care about, we shoot them down as being too young to know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, and we've got, there's a historical precedent for that too. If you look at the suffragettes, you know, being told to get off the streets and because men know what the important decisions are. And you look at the abolitionists, they were told that the economy would never survive without slaves. And here we are again, these kids are defending their future. And we've got people just saying, no, you don't know, you know, go back to school. And I just think all of us have to decide which side of history we're going to be on, because these kids aren't going to stop. We've interviewed a lot of them. We've been through Europe and joined some of the climate strikes and seeing what they're doing there. And they understand. And it's their future at stake. So I think it's really up to us to nurture them through this and provide the solutions and the opportunities so they can feel hopeful about their future. It's very important.
Listening to Damon Gammo, his film is 2040, a new film looking at the year 2040 in the hopes it can provide the world he hopes for his daughter, Violet. You mentioned research. You mentioned a psychologist. Where was your starting point? How do you go about researching something as vast as this, Damon?
Yeah, it was around, I actually had a researcher who was at ABC, she worked at The Catalyst, and her and I spent about 8 months just looking for solutions, and really it was about not finding silver bullet solutions. It was about finding ones that had cascading benefits to them. So I guess one of the most relevant examples is this regenerative agriculture movement that's spreading around the world at the moment. And it's farmers actually finding ways to put the carbon that's doing us damage in the atmosphere and putting it back into their soils using various practices.
Now, once you put that carbon back into the soil, not only does it improve the quality of that soil, which leads to better food, but also it retains water. So for every percentage of carbon that you put in the soil for every 30 centimetres, it increases the water holding capacity of that soil by 166,000 litres of water. So it's an astonishing cascading benefit to what is pulling carbon out of the atmosphere. So decisions and solutions were based on that, in that, you know, they weren't just simple answers or sort of a more reductionist model. They had to have far-reaching benefits, and that made it quite a task. But I think the ones we did find so far are resonating really strongly with people, because we would do them even if we didn't have a climate problem. We'd do them anyway because of the benefits they bring us.
Some seem without direct impact, but obviously have national and international consequences. And one of the ones that comes up in the trailer for the documentary is to improve the lot and the power and the ability of women to have an impact. How did you explore that one?
Yeah, look, that was probably the biggest shock. So we worked with an organisation called Project Drawdown, which are based in the US, and they spent about 7 years coming up with, they sort of mapped the 100 best solutions to reversing global warming. So not just mitigating it, but actually reversing it. And they ranked them. And they found that when you combine number 6 and 7, the number one solution was actually the empowerment and of women and girls. And the reason that is that if you look, there's about 96 million girls around the world that don't get to complete their education. And when that happens, their average birth rate's about 5 children. But if they are able to finish their education, they also have access to reproductive health services and job opportunities, then that number, they get to choose when and how many children they're going to have, and the average drops to about 2. So what that means is that that's a differential of 1 billion people, according to the UN, by 2050. So obviously that's going to have an enormous impact on resources and thus the climate. So, you know, we should be empowering these women anyway. That's a wonderful thing to do on its own. But then you get these incredible cascading benefits, which just means it's a bit of a no-brainer to get on with.
David, were there other surprises as you delved further into this that you hadn't initially considered or thought of?
Oh, look, yeah, most of them, really. I was very new to this, and whether it was, you know, decentralised energy grids in Bangladesh, who are just streaks ahead of what we're doing, but probably the biggest surprise was how powerful seaweed can be. So seaweed, there's scientists all around the world now that are sort of regrowing the seaweed because of our warming oceans. A lot of the kelp's been wiped out, including a lot in Australia, 95% in eastern Tasmania. And it's one of the fastest, or if not the fastest, growing organism in the world. So it can grow about 0.5 metre a day, which means it's sequestering a phenomenal amount of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere as it's growing. And then if you sort of grow it in water that's deeper than 1,000 metres, it sinks to the bottom and stores as carbon there. And they've also now used it for biofuels and fibres in clothes. Seaweed plastics, of course, is a food source. But all the marine life returns again once that seaweed comes back, because it provides an ecosystem. And there's even actually a university in Queensland that have just discovered if you add this certain type of seaweed to the feed of cattle, it can reduce their methane by up to 80%. So it's an astonishing solution that isn't touched yet. There's no vested interest. There's no nothing political about it. It's just a very clean solution. So the people we've been working with we've been showing the film around, and they've been raising capital. And we've just got, with the Intrepid Foundation, we're able to launch the first sort of seaweed platform off Bruny Island in Tasmania. So that's part of our action plan. After people see the film, they can go to our website and tune into about 40 different things they can do. And we've teed up with various organisations so people can take action and get involved. And one of those is helping us to launch this seaweed platform in Tasmania.
Did you expect that when you started, that you would actually be part of the path to making the change, as well as just charting the direction we could take?
Look, that was always the intention. My frustration is often that I'll watch a terrific documentary and feel full of hope and aspiration, and then 5 or 10 minutes later, it's amazing how quickly that dissipates because of the world we live in. So right from the beginning, we were part of an organisation called Good Pitch, which they choose 7 films and put you in a room, basically in the opera house. I had 7 minutes to pitch this film, and then it was sort of like this a supercharged episode of Oprah Winfrey where people come to the mic and say, look, we really love this idea, we're going to give you X amount of dollars. So we raised a significant amount of money for an impact campaign. So that money didn't go towards the film, We used it to develop like a school study guide. So there's a free lesson plan for teachers from grade 5 to 10 with 31 lessons and a host of other things, including this website. Because I think everyone realised that, you know, these days the film isn't quite enough. You can really build quite a movement and a force behind a film, as we experienced with Sugar. And I guess we just wanted to do that, I guess, in the climate space, which, again, people really want to do things, but they're just unsure of what that is they can do. So what we provide is things that they resonated with in the film, and then whatever their passion is or whatever lit them up in the film, they're able to take a clean action on it.
On ABC Radio, you're with me, Louise Saunders. You're listening to Damon Gameau. He is an actor, he's a filmmaker, and his new documentary is called 2040. And it's either in cinemas now where you are, or it is coming to one near you very soon.